The following is general advice only and should not be construed as accounting, legal, or any other professional advice. The details of your situation are fact-dependent, and you are advised to seek the help of a competent professional. What's happening, everyone? Welcome to CPA Reviewed, the official podcast of Brother71.com. I am your host, Jeff Elliott. I am a licensed CPA in the state of Kansas, much to the chagrin of many, I'm sure. This is CPA Reviewed, where we make the CPA exam way more exciting than it should be. Happy Wednesday to you. Today is Wednesday, February 8th. 2012. All right. Well, we have a special edition of CPA Reviewed today. Normally, I take questions and answer them to the best of my ability, but my opinion is not always correct. Just ask my wife. But on today's show, we are going to switch it up a bit. The Another71.com forum is the place to go to talk about the CPA exam. I think there's like 43,000 registered members there. So, of course, all 43,000 don't post at the same time, obviously. But and a lot of people have passed and don't post anymore, because once you pass the CPA exam, usually you don't go back to CPA exam sites. Although some people do, and I appreciate that, because it helps. It helps to have some veteran leadership. So, but some forum members started a thread called the Rules of the CPA Exam. And it's actually started by a forum member named Bob Kors. And it has since evolved into the top things you must know about the CPA exam. So it's the unofficial rules of the CPA exam. So what I'm going to do, and there's over 25 of them, and I think it's pretty interesting. So I'm going to go through the first 25 or so and give you my thoughts, if I have any on them. All right, Bob Kaur says, CPA exam rule number one. If something is on the CSOs, which is the content specification outline, and you blow it off, you are guaranteed to see a material percent of it on your actual CPA exam. This is a variation of Murphy's Law. Bob is correct. You're studying for regulation. You know that AMT, like kind exchanges, 1231, 1245, 1250 assets are part of tax, but either they're too boring and you don't want to study for them, or you don't have time and so you blow them off. Guess what's going to be the difference between a 74 and a 75? At least it was for this guy. That's me, by the way. Mini Morty. And Mini Morty is actually one of my favorite posters. He rubs some people the wrong way, but he is a veteran. He's already passed the exam. He passed it his first time with really high scores, and I appreciate him being on the forum, because sometimes when people post, they forget what they can and cannot say, and he is pretty active on the forum, and he always flags those posts so I can go in and gently remind that person through a private email, hey, please don't do that. You cannot say I had X number of questions on the exam. Can't do that. So I appreciate Mini Morty's rule number two. Leave enough time for the simulations. If the simulations are worth 40% of your score, make sure you give yourself 40% of your available time. Okay. So, let's see. Regulation is 3 hours. So that's you doing some quick Spidey math. That's 180 minutes. And 40% of 180 minutes is 72 minutes. And 72 minutes is just a tad over an hour. And so you get to your simulations and you have a little over an hour. Well, right, wrong, or indifferent. If you get into your simulations and you have over an hour for regulation, that's pretty good. Because regulation is, and I just used regulation as an example because it was the first one that popped in my head because I know it's 3 hours. The reason why I know it's 3 hours is because 3 hours is not long enough for regulation. Auditing used to be 4.5 hours, which was way too long for auditing. I was a slow exam taker, and I still finished it half an hour early. But the lady at the Prometric Center said people usually finish auditing an hour early. So they dropped auditing from 4.5 down to 4, and they boosted BEC from 2.5 to 3. Now, they didn't ask me, but I would have told them to bump up regulation. Regulation is a tough exam, and there's barely enough time to finish it. So, I think that's a good rule of thumb. Don't underestimate how much time you have to leave for your questions, for the simulations. Because what happens is people get obsessive about their multiple choice questions as they're going along. So, they'll get hung up on some stupid calculation and obsess about it for 5 minutes when they only should have spent like a minute and a half on it to begin with, just for time budgeting purposes. And so they've shafted themselves 3.5 minutes out of their simulation. And if you do that enough times over 3 testlets, that adds up. So well said, leave enough time for the simulations. Cash Money says what he said. Tebow. I am a Tim Tebow fan. I think he is good for the NFL, and by all accounts, he's a stand-up guy. But his what he does, his bow that he does, or not a bow, but his kneel. There you go. How's it for? His kneels is called T-bowing. People have coined it T-bowing. And I saw with the Super Bowl just ended, that famous shot of Brady sitting there hunched over almost like he's praying. Someone on Facebook created a graphic. It's called Brady-ing, and he's sitting there. And so people are sitting down and doing the Brady thing. I was personally hoping for a good game, so I wanted Brady to actually make that last minute throw. So, and also I don't want all the Boston area people to hate me. Hey, when Brady took over for Drew Bledsoe, and they're playing the Raiders in that, I believe it's a playoff game, and it was all snowing. I was pulling for Tom Brady. I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan, if anything, because I'm from Kansas City area. So we don't have much to root for. So inevitably, whatever teams are in the Super Bowl, I do not have a rooting interest. All right, number 4, MLA says, bring soft earplugs with you. The Prometric provided headphones are garbage. And a lot of the miscellaneous noise in the test room is in fact distracting. Even if you ultimately decide to not use them, it's better to have them available. All right. The little headphones that they have, they look like firing range earmuffs. And when they're on your ear, it sounds like, you know how when you put a seashell up to your ear, you can hear the ocean? You put it over your ear. The headphones in the Prometric Center, you can hear the ocean. So, if that makes any sense. So yeah, and plus, I'm telling you, inevitably, there's going to be some person sitting next to you and just making crazy noise, and you're under the gun, you're stressed out, and you got this dude next to you just hacking and doing worse. I had someone making, let's see. This is a professionally oriented show. So let's just say that the person had flatulence. We'll say that. And the earmuffs were not, stopping it. I mean, I could hear it. I was like, oh my goodness. He was behind me. That's bad. Okay. This is digressing. Rule number five, if you are at a multiple choice question and don't know the answer, take a look at the answers. Three of them will have something in common, and the fourth is the odd man out. Choose the odd man out. That's true. That's good. That is good advice. You know, inevitably, the AICPA is testing you to see if you remember like some exception to the rule. And so the three of them don't belong because they're wrong. But if you don't know the rule, then one of the wrong ones will entice you. And that's how the exam works. They set you up, so you have to, usually, if the first answer, like if answer A looks really good, well, keep reading, because answer A looks really good for a reason. Rule number six, Katie says, bring headache meds with you, even if you don't think you need it. Those crappy headphones may be the culprit. There we go, the headphones again. Or maybe it's just a tension. You don't want to be starting your third Teslit at the same time as you start a migraine. If you're prone to get migraines or prone to get headaches, that's good advice because, I mean, it can be a long third Teslit if you're tired, if you have a headache, if you just flat out don't care anymore. And then to add insult to injury, then you have the simulations take care of beyond that. So whatever you need. Something that I did was, and this must have been, I must have taken the exam during a cold weather season because I distinctly remember, and I don't even know if this was a violation or not, I hung up my coat and I had in it one of those like glass bottles of like Starbucks, whatever, Starbucks mocha. You know, you can get it for like $2 at a gas station. It's like Starbucks in a bottle. Because I knew that if I was dying, I would take a break after Tesla 2 and go and slam that thing in the bathroom, which I did. I was also known to go in the bathroom and do jumping jacks. So that's kind of awkward when you're doing jumping jacks in the bathroom. And, of course, the Prometric bathrooms only have, like, one bathroom. It's like a unisex bathroom. So you open the door and there's like someone of the opposite sex, like, waiting. So there you're doing a bunch of jumping around in the bathroom. Oh, don't mind me. Kitty also says, rule number seven, answer your simulations in order from the most comfortable topic to the least comfortable topic to maximize your points if you run out of time. If you do find yourself out of time, put zeros in all the blanks you have calculated. She says, I think actually Mindy Morty said that. That's interesting because when I was taking the exam, it was when they had the two simulations and not the seven tabs in one simulation. So yeah, you can do that now. That's good advice. You don't want to leave anything blank. So if nothing else, put zeros. That is good advice. Because you will not get counted off. I mean, by filling in a blank with a zero on a blank that you would have otherwise left blank, too many blanks. It just makes sense to do that because actually you're putting in an answer by putting in a zero and it can only help you. Putting in an answer when you would have left it blank will not hurt you. A lot of blanks there. Hope I'm making sense. Rule number eight, don't forget you can use the authoritative literature tab while working simulations to research how to handle topics you're not sure about. That's true. Just watch your time management. Rule number nine, expect questions in sims that are completely out of left field, weren't covered in your review material, you have no idea how to answer, and or don't make any kind of sense. Try to narrow the choices, then guess and move on. Assume it's a pretest question that doesn't count anyway, because there are lots. And that is, man, Katie's on a roll. The pretest questions can be up to 20%. So that's good. And Katie, like I said, Katie's on a roll. I think she has five rules here. Let's go, Katie. Rule number 10, don't wait until you're ready to sit. You'll never be ready. Schedule an appointment and commit to it. Man, Katie, you're on. Katie's on fire. The same thing goes for marriage and parenting. You'll never be ready. You'll never have enough money. Just do it. Okay. Rule number 11. Just to back up, my wife and I, we had this master plan. We got married, and we're coming up on our 10th anniversary. So she's put up with me for over 11 years now. But anyway, when we got married, we had this 5-year plan where we were going to be doing a bunch of traveling, and we were going to wait to have kids for 5 years, and we had a baby 10 months later. So you can do the math. So yeah, now we're getting ready to celebrate our 10th anniversary, like I said, this summer, and we have 5 kids. Anyway, just go for it, right? Rule number 11, do not panic if you're sitting in an exam and you think you're bombing. Keep plugging away and don't walk out. Again, this is from Katie. Everyone feels that way. Don't assume that you failed after you've left the testing center. These exams aren't like the exams you've taken your entire life. You probably didn't get 75 of the questions right, but that doesn't matter. All that matters is how you did compared to how well other people did. You very well might have failed, but you can't tell until you actually get your score. If you're going through your exam and you just feel like you're just getting destroyed, maybe you're actually doing really well and you actually know your stuff. And the reason why the questions seem like insanity is because you started out on your medium test slip, but then you shifted into difficult because you were doing well. Then your third test slip was difficult because you're doing well, which means you're scoring crazy points. And that's true. A 75 is not a 75%, not at all. It's an arbitrary score. What does a 75 mean? It's a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know, candidate. A 75 is arrived at some psychometric, using some psychometric formula that's locked in a vault and kept next to the Kentucky Fried Chicken recipe and the Coca-Cola formula. And So, yeah, no one knows what it, I mean, no one knows how you get a 75. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because you just go in and do your best. And then if you come up short, then you do it again. You do it again. You do it again. You just keep plugging away. I'm ashamed that I dropped a cliche. All that matters is that you, and she said, all that matters is how you compared to how well other people did. And this goes along with the assumption that the CPA exam is graded on a curve. Now, the AICPA says that this is not true. And I've just kind of stopped even trying to figure out if that's the case or not, because let's look at the evidence here. You have an exam. Okay, going back to BEC. BEC prior to 2011, is that right? Yeah, BEC prior to 2011 was strictly multiple choice. It was 90 multiple choice, no simulations, no written communication, multiple choice only, boom, done. You could still not get your score until like 4 to 6 weeks after your exam on average. When I was taking the GMAT so I could go in and take my master's courses so that I could sit for the CPA exam, I hit the submit button sitting there in the testing center, and it told me right away what my score was because it's multiple choice, okay? So BEC was multiple choice only, but they wouldn't tell you what your score was. And so something did not add up. And of course, the reason officially is that, you know, you gotta make sure all the scores are vetted and whatnot. Why couldn't they have given like an advisory score? Okay. Like, hey, you scored an 81 pending an audit of your test. But so it's one of the conspiracy theories that will be around forever, probably. But does it matter? I mean, you walking into an exam and sitting down and taking it, does it matter how it scored to you? No. All that matters is that you know the material, you sit down, execute, and it doesn't matter what the pass rate is, what the historical pass rate is for this testing window. It doesn't matter how everyone else did. All that matters is how you do on that day, and that's all that you can control. All right. Rule number 12. If you're in the middle of a testlet but feel the need to blow off some steam, please be considerate of your fellow neighbors. Flip off the camera or something. I don't care. Just do it in silence. And this is still what the person's writing, username Hut Hut. Your frustration is understandable, but not appreciated. It's disruptive. Yeah, that's true. I mean, if you're sitting there having a meltdown, number one, you're being videotaped. Number two, you're being audio taped. I'm sure there's some like red emergency button underneath the Prometric person's desk, like, and if they hit it, like SWAT team people are going to drop out of the ceiling. So, yeah, if you're having a meltdown, do it in silence. Hut Hut also says rule number 13, do not piss off the Prometric people. No exception. That's good advice. Here's a little story. My first exam ever, you know, I'm one of those people who who don't sign the back of my credit card. Well, then I had a credit card. I don't have credit cards anymore. But that's another story for another day. I'm a Dave Ramsey debit card kind of guy. So I had my Bank of America credit card that had my picture on it. Okay. So I had my photo ID for my driver's license and my Bank of America credit card with my picture on it. My second photo ID. Good to go, right? Well, the key is signed photo ID. So I go in there, and this is my first exam ever. And it was financial accounting and reporting on top of it all. And so I go in there, I'm just nervous and whatever. And I'm checking in. So I hand the lady my driver's license. Okay. I hand her my credit card, and she flips over. She's like, "This isn't signed." And I said, "Oh." And she hands it back to me. I said, "Yeah, I think my other one is out in the car." And she said, she looked at me and she said, "If you go out there and sign that, I'm going to write you up." Of course, what does "I'm going to write you up" even mean, other than I thought that like my my career as I knew it was over if I did that. So, "Oh no, lady at the Prometric Center is going to write me up." No. But at the time I was like, okay. So she's like, "I'm going to let you take the exam, but I'm going to put a note in your file that you didn't have proper ID, and like the ASCPA or NASBA or whoever can take it up with you." So I go in there and I sit there, I hit start on my exam, and I literally sat there for 10 minutes just spacing out at the first question. I'm like, "Oh crap, I'm done. It doesn't matter what I do on this exam because it's going to be null and void anyway, because obviously I was an imposter because I didn't have a signed second ID. I'm going to get all these questions and, but so anyway, so don't piss off the Prometric people." Rule number 14, before entering the building to take the test, run up and down some stairs, jog in place, etc. Get some exercise to clear the tension. Or go in the bathroom and do jumping jacks, like I said. Rule 15, if the simulations are the fourth testlet, take a quick bathroom break before doing them. And CPA pending continues to write, "Doing the pee dance in your seat is uncomfortable. I might have scored a 90 if I didn't have to go so badly." Amen. Cassia writes, number 16, wear red panties. And a bunch of the forum ladies, and I think even some of the single forum guys who liked the topic, were discussing the benefits of wearing red panties to your exam. And apparently, studies have shown if you wear red underwear at your exam, it adds 5 to 15 points to your score. No, I'm joking about that, but everyone in the forum, the women anyway, are swearing by red panties. So the women who came up short, like maybe they scored a 73, they're all going out and buying red panties. So, okay. Okay. So take that for what it's worth, ladies. Number 17, study your weak topics the day or two before the exam. Chances are rule number one will apply and the AICPA will hit it where it hurts the most. That's true. Cassia also says, in your simulations, put zeros versus the blanks. Number 18, when you receive your first passing grade, do not underestimate the exams. Do not take breaks from the exam either. Man, this is really good stuff. When I passed financial is a hard exam. I mean, it's the worst. And when I passed financial, I felt like I had like passed the exam. So I basically took a year off, and that was a mistake because I ended up losing that financial credit due to my back-to-back 74s. And so that's good advice. Do not take a, like, celebrate for like 3 days and then get back to it. Number 19, Making the Magic says, Adderall is your friend. And I don't know what Adderall is. And I'm probably incredibly naive for not knowing what Adderall is. I'm assuming it's either Valium or some stimulant. So, but for what that's worth. And don't make fun of me for not knowing what Adderall is, because I don't care. Number 20. Plan out what you're going to eat the day of the exam and stick to things that are high in fiber and protein and easy to digest. Don't eat Mexican food before your exam. Let's see, what did I usually eat before the exam? Coffee, Mountain Dew, and usually a ham sandwich on the way to the testing center. That's usually what I ate, that my wife handed to me as I was walking out the door. Number 21, pay attention to the timer during those few prometric screens with the disclaimer information. I didn't pay attention once and got timed out and ended up not being able to sit for the exam. I wasted time and money. Note, there's no timer on the screen, so you have to go through it quickly. That is true. If you enter your stuff, or bottom line, go in, enter your launch code, yada, yada, instructions, scratch paper, a few formulas, get it done in a few minutes and go. Like, I've had more than one email from someone who said, what do I do? I went in to take my exam. I thought I had like all day to write on my scratch paper. So I just barfed out all of the information that I knew, and then they wouldn't let me take the exam. And then they had to wait for the next window. That's a nightmare scenario. So learn from the plight of others. Don't dilly-dally. So, number 22, dress in layers. I just failed auditing with a 74. How many questions I would have gotten right if my fingers hadn't been blue and my teeth weren't chattering? Literally, it was 60 degrees in there and I was shaking violently and they wouldn't let me wear my jacket. Even if I still would have failed, it would have certainly made much more pleasant testing experience if I would have had half a dozen sweatshirts on. And rule number 23 from that same person: rules vary at different prometric centers. Yes, I know they aren't supposed to. So if at all possible, stick to the one that you normally go to so you don't get surprised on exam day. Number 24, get to Prometric early, especially if it's a day a lot of other people will be testing, like a Friday morning. It's better to get there early and start your exam sooner than have to wait in line behind 25 other exam takers in the room stressing out. Yep. Yeah. The awkward chatter in a Prometric waiting room. Oh, hey, are you taking the CPA exam? Yeah. Oh, hey, are you taking the CPA exam? No, I'm taking the nurse practitioner exam. Oh. Like, oh, I'm taking the CPA exam. What section? BEC. Oh, me too. What course did you use? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, I used blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then the whole time you're wishing you could just get in there and take your freaking exam. And finally, number 25, and there's more, but we'll save those for another day. Don't spread out your studying, Katie chimes in. For almost everyone, it's better to study every spare moment for 4 weeks than 3 hours a night for 4 months. Amen, sister. That is spot on. There is a significant short-term memory component to the CPA exam. If you spread out financial over 10 weeks, bad news. It would be much better if you crammed it all in 4 weeks, because let's be honest, you don't care about not-for-profit accounting. You don't work in not-for-profit accounting. You don't audit not-for-profit accounting firms. You could not care less about not-for-profit accounting. But for 3 intensive days, you studied not-for-profit accounting and can score 80% proficiency on not-for-profit accounting. 6 weeks later, no. Today, yes. Go in there, take that exam. Don't spread it out. All right, well, this has been a different sort of show. I hope it's been beneficial. It was kind of a fun one to do because everyone else wrote the content. I just kind of piggybacked off it. So, and added some thoughts. So again, go to the forum, another71.com/CPA-exam-forum. You know how to get there. So anyway, leave your, or drop some knowledge there. Go to another71.com, click on the upper right-hand corner, ask Jeff, or to Facebook, facebook.com/another71. Leave your questions, comments. All right, this has been CPA Reviewed. Until next time, take care. Talk to you soon.